Hi, I will be interviewing my father. He is a Slavic refugee from Russia. Now I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Ilya Novofastovsky. So Ilya is the first name, and I grew up in St. Petersburg, Russia. It was called Leningrad at the time, and it was part of the Soviet Union. So I, at the age 13, I became a refugee from Soviet Russia. We left and came by way of Austria and then lived in Italy for a while before we got to the United States.
So, as a child at the time, how did it feel? Like, what was your experience in Russia before you immigrated?
In some sense, I feel like I got the best of both worlds. Growing up in Russia, my family was fairly well respected. My parents were very accomplished professionals. My mother was head surgeon in St. Petersburg, and my father was a civil engineer, in charge of major highways, such as, let's say, the highway from St. Petersburg to Moscow, which was the main highway in Soviet Union at the time, something that my father designed and was in charge of. But aside from these kinds of careers, there was also a dark side to being there. Our apartment was bugged, our phone was tapped, we were followed by KGB agents here and there. There were instances when my father would just be picked up by them off the street and disappear for several days of questioning, and we wouldn't know where he was or what was going on. We had some foreigners reach out to us because we were rather a famous family. We had to follow our Jewish traditions in secret because it was illegal to practice anything like that. So the very first time that I went to synagogue, for example, temple, was when I was 13, and it was time for my bar mitzvah, and my grandfather was teaching me what that's about because he knew the prayer books by heart, but we didn't actually have them. And so I remember coming to this temple building and seeing a KGB agent across the street with a notebook looking straight at me and, writing down my name.
So you were a child at the time, so did other students or teachers treat you differently when you were in school or out of school?
I didn't feel it from the teachers. I did feel it from the students. I would end up in fights. Russian kids would pick on me, or if I stood up for one of the other kids that they were picking on, they loved to get me into some kind of altercation. So they would, insult me for being Jewish and basically try to beat me up on a regular basis.
So your parents filed in what year for like refuse, like to leave the Soviet Union?
I was born in 1973, and so I was very, very little when they started. It had to be, in the late 70s sometime. So I was only a few years old. So I basically grew up with us trying to leave the country. I remember them going to fill out applications every 6 months, being put through a process, and being refused every 6 months until 1987, when we were finally allowed to go. I remember, you know, these them being called to meetings where they were, you know, berated for betraying, you know, the Soviet Union. I remember them being fired from their jobs for it, and so on. So it was just part of my upbringing. But as a kid, you think these things are normal. You
know? Right. So, like, majority of your life, you were considered like a refusenik.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you know that term, right? Our family was kind of a famous refusenik family. And ultimately, when we were allowed to leave, it was a result of negotiations between President Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev, the Russian premier at the time. And so our names were exchanged in lists, you know, that they were negotiating over.
Right. While you were immigrating to the U.S., so you were saying how you traveled through different places, like Rome you stayed. What was the situation like the living situation, the transportation? Did the government help? How did that all go?
So, basically, we were allowed to leave Russia with $200 for the entire family to make a new life.
And that was you and your parents? Your the sister whole family. Was already here.
So that was me, my two parents, and my grandfather and my grandmother. That was the family unit.
Okay.
It was five of us. We were searched, you know, valuables were taken away, so forth and so on, and we were allowed to leave with whatever we could basically carry, and we were put on the plane to Austria, Vienna. We were the only family on the plane because at the time the Soviet Union was closed to the outside world, and when we arrived, we were met with a line of armed men in uniforms and machine guns who were speaking German, which really, you know, triggered my grandfather. He wasn't sure, you know, after being a World War II veteran, what was about to happen.
Right.
And he had like a heart episode. I'm not sure if it was a full-on heart attack, but I remember that first night in a little hotel that we were in, that my mother, who was a doctor, basically had to come up with kind of makeshift MacGyver kind of medical approach to settle down his heart condition, so that at some point the ambulance came and she was, you know, full on basically resuscitating him and worked on him, and they just let her do that and do her thing, just watched in amazement.
So you went from Austria to Italy. Were your living situation, so was it set up by the government or whoever, like the refugee programs? Like, did you have to pay for your own living, and did you guys find jobs while you were living there?
So we were met in Vienna, in Austria, by like nonprofit groups for immigrants.
Right.
Some were from Israel and wanted us to go to Israel, but we wanted to go to the United States. So people basically helped us take a train. There was a whole train of different refugees to Rome. And so we got onto this train.
So you didn't stay in Austria when you landed?
No, just a couple of days.
Okay.
And we were on a train to Rome. And we were helping already all kinds of other refugees that were apparently in need. I remember that there was a lot of elderly on the train, and I was, you know, helping to carry and lift their bags. I mean, I ended up kind of injuring my back on that journey. But we landed in Rome and found some other immigrant assistance groups and Jewish groups like Hias, which still operates here in New York, to assist us with filing the paperwork with the U.S. Embassy and let us live. They had very, very limited supply. I mean, I don't think we took anything from any government in terms of assistance. My parents had different goods from Russia that they sold, and so we got to live in a Roman suburb for a few months, and we kind of toured Italy here and there.
So during this process, you know, it's hard because you're seeing your parents go through this and your family. Do you think your parents, like, protected you more from, like, the real part of it? Or do you think you were kind of, like, all-knowing, like, your parents spoke to you about it all and, like, you were in the circle?
You know, we were going to America. It was like a dream. So, in some sense, your expectations of the future determine your present attitude. We were incredibly optimistic and incredibly kind of elated to be on this journey. If it was hard for them, I didn't notice. But basically, I was discovering a whole new world.
So how was it all in America once you got here? Like, the government, normally when you're a refugee, they help out. I don't know how it was at the time. We've kind of spoken about, like, 3 to 6 months somewhere there, depending on, like, where you are and what time it was in New Jersey, because we've heard various things. How was it, like, financially once you got, you were in America? Was it easy to find a job for your parents? And did you, like, help financially?
So it wasn't easy. Sort of as excited as we were on the way, actually being here was more of a rude awakening. Like, there was no party.
Right.
there was no one waiting for us. There was, you know, President Reagan didn't, you know, pick us up from at the airport, right? We landed. It was a very unusual incident. I remember Eyewitness News interviewing us for the evening news when we came. But after that sort of 15 minutes of fame, nobody cared.
Right. All.
And so, yeah, we were just left to now deal with being in Brooklyn and having to find our way. Thankfully, you know, my sister was there. We moved in. We all shared an apartment with her, her husband, and her newborn. So, you know, I was sleeping on the floor, you know, with my grandparents for some months until we started to settle in. And slowly, and my parents, you know, signed up for English classes and started to learn. My father started to drive a cab and learn the city. And so kind of slowly, we started to get on our feet. I enlisted in a school. At first, it was a Jewish school. And got my first job that summer to help a guy work on his house and build an extension to his house that summer. Mm. He would give me pizza for lunch, so I thought that was great. That's how I made money to buy my first Apple computer in 1987.
Wow. So did you immediately go to school once you immigrated here, or did it take some time to...
I went very quickly. I don't think there was much delay at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we arrived in the spring of 1987, so I had to finish out the year somewhere. There was a Jewish school that was incredibly interested in me because I come from a rather famous line of rabbis.
Right.
On my mother's side, we're kind of related to the Lubavitch Rebbe, and so I had you know, like a standing scholarship to study in the, you know, in the yeshiva in a Jewish school. But you know, ultimately, we wanted to integrate and be part of, you know, America at large.
Mm-hmm.
So after a little bit of yeshiva, and I ended up going for an English as a second language ESL program in a high school in Brooklyn called Edward R. Murrow High School. And then I ended up going to Murrow for my high school career.
So you were about 14 when you came?
Like 13 and a half, yeah.
So you were in high school for like 5 more years after that. Do you think...
4.
Or 4 more years, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't flunk out or anything.
So how did it all go, like, for college? Because you were still an immigrant. Were you already a U.S. citizen when you went to college?
No. I was in college in my sophomore year when we... got our citizenship.
So you're still a refugee, legally wise.
So, yeah. So through high school and almost half of college, I was not a citizen yet. We were on track. We had, you know, what's called a green card, or, you know, we had the right to work and be here. But it was all temporary.
And, like, once you got the visa, was there like, a sense of relief of some sort or something, like, or anything like that? Like, was there a celebration, as you said, like, when you came to
America? Oh, yeah. I mean, I was sworn into citizenship in a, you know, very cool ceremony at the federal court downtown Brooklyn. And it was... like a major milestone. I remember the day. I remember all of us sort of, you know, getting together and celebrating the occasion. The ceremony itself was very inspiring. And later on, when I was already in law school, and I came back to that courthouse, standing up to represent the United States, you know, it was nice.
Yeah. Now you're a lawyer. So do you think that, like, your immigration and, like, the way your life happened, do you think that's what inspired you to become a lawyer? Like, did that help motivate your...
I definitely think, it's a part of me. I mean, the drive to help, the drive to, you know, help the underdog, you know, in some of the civil rights cases that I do, or some of the catastrophic, you know, dramas and injuries that we handle, I don't think my law firm would be possible anywhere else in the world. It's like a very American sense of law and justice and the rule of law, the way that it is in this country. I think is an amazing tradition that I continue to kind of be inspired by. And as an outsider, as an immigrant, I think I have a special perspective on it.
Yeah. Did you ever think about being like an immigration lawyer of some sort to help out people that were like you?
Yeah, I mean, the questions keep on coming. Certainly with the events in Ukraine, I'm getting a lot of those calls, and I'm helping people find answers. But I like litigation. I like going to court more than I do processing paperwork.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of sums it up to today with you, with 4 kids and a dog. Yeah.
Yep, living the American dream.
Yeah. So that was your story. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we finish up?
I think that's great. I mean, I just think it's amazing that you can come here and you know, start watching TV, start trying to understand, you know, Donald Duck and pick up some English from all that, and ultimately work your way into, you know, having a a nice family and
successful life.
I think, you know, some think it's successful. To me, it's just kind of every day is a new day.
Yeah. Living like there's no tomorrow, I guess. All right. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.